Okay. So I'm Laura Kahn. I chair the Environmental Advisory Council. Dawn?
Hi, Dawn Henning, engineering staff, and I help out with the logistics of the council.
Kathy?
Hi, I'm Kathy Fay, and I am the secretary of the council.
Iris?
Iris Kaminsky, I'm a board member.
Florestine?
You're muted.
You're muted. Hi, we couldn't hear you, Florestine. Are you?
I saw myself unmuting.
Great.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can.
Board member.
Great. Chris?
Chris Ozick, Urban Resource Initiative.
Anstris.
Anstris Farwell, New Haven Urban Design League.
Kimmy.
Hi, my name is Kimmy Cushman. I'm a PhD student at Yale, and I'm a possible new member.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Pierre.
Hi, Pierre Barber, Executive Director, New Haven Solid Waste and Recycling Authority.
Jean.
Jeannie Dubino, neighbor and citizen, also neighbor of Laura's.
Jean Connolly. Okay.
Unmuting.
Okay. Go ahead. Jean? Jean Connolly is another New Haven resident. Lynn?
Lynn Barnett, I'm a New Haven resident and the New Haven Bi-Regional Group.
Okay. Cy?
Hi, I'm Cy Riala. I'm the climate and environment reporter for the Yale Daily News.
Aaron? Are you with us, Aaron? Well, that's Aaron Good, and he is here in some way, shape, or form. Kevin?
Kevin McCarthy, Vice Chair.
And we have two people joining us by phone. And if either of you, if the person with area code 407 wants to say hi, please do.
Hi, Laura. This is Kristen. Oh. Kristen Gordon, member of the council.
Great. Thanks, Kristen. I thought that was you. Okay. And the other person with a 203-410-8502 number, if you feel like introducing to yourself, this is your opportunity. Okay. That person does not wish to be identified. So just so we're clear for anybody who is not familiar with this entity, we are the city board that deals with environmental issues, and this is a public meeting. Everyone's welcome. To officially join as a member, one has to apply to the city to be a member. Everyone is always invited to attend meetings, but those of us who are actual members who do the voting and make decisions are a specific group. Anyway, so just so you know. Okay, great. That was introductions. I just want to remind all the members that we were each sent an ethics agreement to sign by the city with a form. If anybody didn't get it or didn't sign it, you need to sign it and send it by email or snail mail to the mayor's office. And if you need help with that, you can contact me or Dawn. I'm sure one of us can help you, or Taisha Anderson in the mayor's office. She can help you, but please don't forget to do that. It's very, very important. And please don't forget to read the list of do's and don'ts that came with that thing. Okay. And I will remind everybody that whenever you comment at all in public, you're doing it as a member of the Environmental Advisory Council, if you indeed are a member. So thank you. Okay. So I think we have some people who have to leave fairly early. So we're going to go in. We're going to start with the English station issue, because we just received a memo from the owners concerning the status of the English station remediation. And Earlier this month, we received an update from United Illuminating about what they have done. And we seem to be at somewhat of a, I don't know, an impasse maybe. The owners, so I emailed all the members of the council the memo from the attorneys representing English Station and a few people who've been working on the issue. And it seems to me, I don't know if all of you had a chance to read this. Aaron, do you have something to say? Okay. Well, anyway, it seems to me that the issue is about who's going to pay for the cleanup that goes beyond the required cleanup UI has to do to bring it up to be clean, the site to be clean enough to be usable. And I'm guessing we're going to have to find some money for that. That is my guess. So I don't know whether the rest of you agree with me or what you got out of reading this document, but if anybody has a comment, and if Dawn wants us to see the document, I emailed it to her so she could share it with us.
Well, I'll start out.
Okay.
I was kind of shocked to read right off the bat that they are committed to a mixed use development on the site, because I just can't imagine that it could ever get clean enough to make to put residential on the site. That's, you know, the threshold to do residential is really high compared to non-residential. So
okay, here's my thing. I figure they're going for the stars. Maybe they want a hotel and casino or whatever, and they'll take whatever they can get, but they're going to aim, you know, for whatever, right? I don't know. Yes, it may be that for many generations to come, it will not be that clean, but I don't know. Anybody else agree or disagree with Kathy's take? Iris?
No, I just have more questions. And I think people that were more involved might know. But my general question is, the figure I heard was $30 million cleanup. And my question, and I don't know if anybody here could answer, I overheard in one of the podcasts that I'm listening on energy, sometimes when there is a remediation or some kind of when an entity comes to clean up or do something, a portion should go for public or something. So I don't know if we're going to get any money about that, but that's not, not related to the money. I just think that we are David's versus Goliath's. Like, we don't have the means and the resources to even know what they're doing. We're clueless here. And and I don't know that I could go through rooms of documents to see what they're doing as a volunteer member here. So, and I don't know that the city has the means, and I don't know that DEEP is is really telling us all they know. So I'm very concerned. And so they do acknowledge that it's very complex. I don't know how to clean PCBs. And I don't know what the devastation to the area has already been done and how much we're compromising here, and why is DEEP compromising in advance for us, and how much all of this is a done deal, you know, somebody, and we could have never known if the neighbors probably wouldn't be alert. I don't know. So it's kind of like something that we're, as a board, I don't know that we have any expertise to deal with this. And maybe Dawn could answer, or people who have been longer involved than me. I'm just very concerned, and maybe I'm just overreacting, or maybe too concerned. So I would be, if they break it down to like simplify it, I would be willing to look at some documents. So
Okay, well, Iris, you've been sent all the documents all along. So you have the documents we have. And the thing is, we need to get it cleaned up as well as we can, as soon as we can. So let's work on that. Let's not try for expertise. Yes, Lynn.
Okay, thank you. So years ago, we had someone used to work for the state attorney general's office look into it for us. And in terms of remediation, it is that the owner determines the end use, what it's intended to be used for, and the remediation is keyed to that. If the owners are not around and not coming forth with what they want to use it for, then who's to determine, you know, they're going to go for the low ball. So mixed use, you know, that could be light industry and heavy industry, for example. Light industry use is covered over with asphalt, you know, so that protects people from exposure to the pollutants in the soil. So, I mean, I agree with Iris. It's just, you know, we really don't know what, you know, what the owners want to make of it and what the state is willing to require them to do to make it match to the owner's desire. I agree with Iris.
So I might just, because I work at a housing organization, whenever I hear mixed use, I just always assume it's mixed residential and commercial. Honestly, that might just be an assumption of mine that, you know, maybe there's other, maybe mixed use could be any mixes.
I don't see anything wrong with the council asking the owners to say what their plans are for the end use.
I got hold of the owner's representative's phone number and I talked to him yesterday. I am happy to try and I can call him again. He gave me a cell phone number. He said, call me anytime. Of course he won't reveal anything, but I will call him again and try and catch him off guard and say, what is your plan for using this? And we'll see what he says.
I think another relevant question would be, could they provide examples not only of what they plan to do, but any examples of things comparable to this that they've done and how they would finance it? You know, I understand that they are responsible through the Transfer Act for some of the cleanup. And they disturbed the site and moved pollutants around. And that was the subject of an investigation quite a few years ago by DEEP and EPA. And they tried to move contaminated PCB contaminated oil off the site. So they are involved in the pollution issues at the site, both in the dirt and inside the building with asbestos. That I think that part of the cleanup has been completed, but we'd be good to know. So, you know, where have they done a project that has raised the amount of money to do something like this? You know, who would actually finance it, and what, as I guess it was Kathy said, what would it actually look like? There's limits on the site because, you know, there's only one way in and out. And when we went up to the Attorney General's office, they showed us a plan that was all kinds of tall towers, you know, like 15-story buildings all piled up on basically a piece of fill. And you couldn't have that many people on a site with one way in and one way out, you know, just public safety, fire, emergency vehicles moving around. So there's site constraints beyond the pollution. And
all right.
Yeah.
So I have an idea.
Yeah.
We will compose a letter short asking these questions I will submit it to David Troper, not go through the attorneys, and see what happens. Chris, what's your take on the situation?
I really don't care what the owner is thinking or saying. I have a feeling they're trying to play the two ends against the middle, which is DEP. And, you know, anything that they say could be pipe dreams, and they could collect as much money as they can and then walk away from the deal. I think the focus should be on DEP and to making it to a standard that is safe for the public from a dust standpoint or from public access. But I'm not forgetting about the river. The river is what we really need cleaned, because that's where the public is.
Okay. Yes. Well, I have to tell you, I've hit brick walls with DEP in several issues already within the month. I know you're not surprised, Chris, because you believe we need to be protected from DEP. I know that. I agree that our focus should be on making this cleanup happen as well as we can. And I don't know how we can do that. Anyone have any suggestion about how we hold DEP's feet to the fire?
So I don't know how we could do that. I don't know that we have money, but I did send you in my questions earlier that if there would be an exterior consultant or chemist or scientist or somebody who could just, you know, supervise. Who's exterior supervised that's neutral? Does the city have anybody? And because how would we know what they're doing?
So the city has. I can sort of answer that.
Yes, that's Kevin. Who's that?
Yes, it's Kevin. So the state has what are called licensed environmental professionals, and they're the ones who actually verify site cleanups, and they are independent of the property owner, and they're not DEEP employees. So I would assume that they would be involved with the certification process for this. And they're usually engineers or people with physical science backgrounds.
Dawn, is that the case in this instance?
I haven't been able to review all these documents, so I'm not sure.
It didn't say anything about that in any of the documents.
Oh, I mean, I don't know exactly what DEEP's process is for. It's not a city review. It's definitely a state review. And
okay.
I'm not 100% sure about that.
They have LAPs that are managing the process. That assure me that they are above board.
Yeah, the LAPs are consultants to UI, not to DEEP, and that's what the whole LEP process is about. It was created to relieve the state of the need to hire enough state employees to supervise the many, many brownfields and Superfund sites around the state, and it really means that if a developer or property owner or responsible party like UI through the Transfer Act hires an LEP, it's assumed that that licensed environmental professional knows what they're doing, and it gets a more cursory review by DEP staff. So the question that Iris has posed about independence review isn't solved by an LLP that works for UI. And DEP by law, they do have the right to closely supervise this under the consent order, but it is also an LEP process that puts a lot of power in the hands of the property owner or responsible party. So no, there isn't really an outside review here.
Okay. Well,
to answer the question, I think press, a protest, Basically, when COVID relaxes, if we can get a sizable group and have people from Fairhaven also protesting and creating press, I think we will get, even the threat of press events will probably get movement.
You know, Earth Day is April 22nd. Just that saying.
It might be too soon to be gathering.
I mean, I don't want to be responsible for organizing something like that at that time, but I think come this summer, it's reasonable to say this is dragged on way too long.
I've protested at that site before, and I bet you a bunch of other people on this call have been down there before, years and years and years ago, when they were trying to turn it into a peaker plant.
And it's effective. It's effective.
I think rallies at the site are important. But I also remember when, Lynn, you really spearheaded this when we had the combined sewer outfall issues. In the West River, and we met with legislators and people, and you know, the head of DEEP at the time. I mean, making some meetings like that, especially in the pre-election season, may also yield results of some sort, or at least, you know, bring the issue to the fore. Looks like Aaron showed up.
All right,
Commissioner Estes is willing to come to town in that circumstance about water quality, but I think with this, you know, I think this is a different, I don't know, maybe you could ask Katie Dykes to come and bring people that are responsible for the oversight of English Station and meet with people in the community, say, we're concerned about this, nothing's happening, what can you do, blah, 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 blah.
Well, okay. Especially so, with Mill River UWI and all that, okay. He wants to make a big, you know, example of what a wonderful thing they can do in that community. It's kind of good timing.
Yeah.
Okay. Two things. One, we've been joined by a couple of other people, our aldermanic representative, Sal DeCola, and Arlene DiPino and John. Hi. Welcome to everybody. And whoever this is on the phone, who
is it? Maggie Targo.
Oh, hi. Nice to see you.
I've been hearing you clearly since the beginning, okay. But I couldn't get on.
Great. So this is Maggie Targrove from the New Haven Port Authority, and she's correct. Having internet issues today. Thank you for joining us, all of you.
Okay.
Great. Okay. And, and Mary Woolsey is here too. Okay. So it was suggested to those of us, Anstris and I, and another person or two who went to meet with the Attorney General's office about English Station before the pandemic, that we try DEEP, and if we don't get any satisfaction from DEEP, that we meet with the Attorney General. So I guess I'm going to put in an ask to Katie Dykes that she come to our next meeting to discuss English Station. And if that does not work, we will write our letter to Pura, and we've just been joined by Giovanni Zinn, the city engineer. Welcome. And so if we can't get Katie Dykes to come and meet with us, then we will go back to the Attorney General and see what he says. Does that sound like a plan? Everybody? Do you agree with that?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Yes, but I would say that, if she can't make our meeting time, that we should be, you know, somewhat flexible, you know, with setting up a meeting with Katie Dykes.
Okay. We can do that. Yes.
As someone who's been married for 38 years, I'm all in favor of flexibility.
Yeah. Great. Wow. You get a medal, Kevin. okay. So, if anybody wants to see the memo we got from the attorneys representing the owners of the English Station, we can email it to you if since we're not going to share it in the meeting. So we can email it to anybody who wants it. It is not a private document. And if anybody wants to see UI's latest, they have a website that lists the most recent things they have done on this issue. And it is, where is it? Hang on, I'm looking for it. It is somewhere. I have it somewhere. I don't know. I'll try and find it. If anybody needs to see it, you can call me. I thought I had put it in a document that I could find it from, but I can't see it. So, okay. Let's see. So I think we have come up with a plan for Anguish Station. We're going to ask Katie Dykes to come to a meeting with the Environmental Advisory Council. And if that doesn't work, we're gonna go to the Attorney General. And so now we will go on to the next few things. I'm just gonna quickly go to Pierre Barber because Earth Day is coming and the New Haven Waste and Solid, New Haven Recycling Authority, whatever it is, I can't even think right now, but they have got Earth Day offers. I just want to make sure everybody saw them in the meeting notice I sent because we want to help get the word out that everybody should be recycling correctly and you can get a free bulk waste drop at the Recycling Authority if you want. Pierre, are you there? Oh, there you are. Go ahead, Pierre.
Hi, I'm here. Thank you, Laura. Yep, Earth Day coming up on April 22nd, and our normal protocol to celebrate Earth Day is to try to get involved with the Earth Day Network. This year, we're one of the themes for Earth Day is the food print, and so we're really pushing organic recycling. So I'm sorry, I'm out of breath. I was running from somewhere. So we're going to be raffling off free to everyone, city residents, organic composter, 43-gallon organic composter, two-sided. There'll also be other organics composters available. One's an outdoor one. One is a kitchen composter. So we're really trying to push doing better with recycling our food. We also have some extended hours during that weekend. So on April 3rd and 24th, residents will be able to come down to the transfer station all the way up till 3 o'clock and drop off their recyclables, mattresses, electronics, and come and say hello. So more information is on our website. And I hope to see everyone there.
Okay.
And bring down your cycle.
Mr. Barber.
Thank you. What, Anstress?
Could I ask, Mr. Barber, I have a question.
Yes.
Maybe a few years ago, you came to the council and you talked about a program that I think you were looking to start to recycle textiles.
Mm-hmm.
Going to be a special bag and... what's happening with that?
Well, the special bag portion, that was actually on the city side. The city was going to engage a textile recycler to have them come out through the city and pick up textile bags that were dropped off. I think they would be designated as pink bags.
Yeah.
I'm not sure where that program is. I know there was talk about it, and actually I did see a prototype of one of the pink bags, so I know it was in talks. At the Solid Waste Authority, we still have a textile drop-off for all city residents for, you know, clothing, belts, shoes, whatever is qualified as textiles. So we still accept those at the transfer station.
Right. So someone like me without a car, I can't, you know, it just, I can't get out to the transfer station. So,
Anstress, I will be happy to pick anything you want up and take it to the transfer station. When I went, they were very kind to me and I love going there. I feel very unburdened having been there, and I would be glad to do it again anytime. So don't hesitate to ask.
Yeah. Well, with, you know, a third of New Haveners without cars, you know, if we can encourage the city to look at this again, I know that there's a million and one emergencies the city is looking at. But, you know, a long-term solution means doing something exactly as Mr. Barber has described, that people can have a bag and put it out with their trash.
Well, I'll just add one thing that we're trying to do, and we're going to do it again this year. We still have to pick the neighborhood, is we're going out into to regions in the city and sponsoring Hometown Recycling Day. So residents who have, you know, the textiles and the things that, you know, can be easily carried. Not everything can be easily carried. I'm not supporting that. But we're trying to make it easier and get out into the city and for all these outlying places. So, you know, the transfer station is a bit of a reach in some of the areas of the city. So.
Okay.
So, Pierre?
Wait.
Yes.
Quick question. Have you thought of publicizing the textile recycling and other initiatives at the hazardous waste collection that Regional Water does?
Have we thought of publicizing there? No, we haven't actually thought about publicizing there. I used to sit on that committee. I haven't seen any other publications there.
Oh, no, I'm just saying, put a sign up and say, you know, you guys who are recycling hazardous materials might also be interested in knowing that you can recycle old textiles.
Well, we do have literature, and I know the person over there, so that's certainly a great that's a great suggestion. So,
okay, we'll try. We'll think about how to send out a notice, or we'll talk to Kathy Hurley about that. Lynn, we'll talk to you then. Yeah, Lynn, what's up?
I just have a quick question for Pierre also. Have you been following the Connecticut Coalition for Materials Management, Solid Materials Management, that's been going on for several months now, particularly in the way of organic diversion and how they're encouraging municipalities to do something to begin organic diversion?
Yeah, I actually did attend one of their organizational meetings when they first approached our organization. So yeah, to answer your question, yes, I am following them.
Okay. I want to switch to another topic for a minute because we have some people here from the Port Authority, John Abagnaro and Maggie Targrove, who came specially to talk about this. Then we can pick up the materials management conversation again. But John and Maggie, do you want to tell us how we're doing with the road salt issue and anything else? Or do you want me to read your report? Are you there? I know,
John,
Maggie.
This is Maggie. Yeah. How are you, Laura?
Fine.
Yeah, basically what I said in the email is we will sit down. We don't own anything in the port. It's city-owned streets, and the businesses, all the terminals are privately owned. So having said that, in the fall, we plan on sitting down with Gateway. We've already mentioned it. And seeing what their plan is to alleviate the idling of the truckers waiting for salt. This is, I think I said in my notes to you, Laura, about what the cause was the other vendor, the only other vendor in the state, was closed.
Yeah, we
and
know.
That was in New London. Yeah. Right.
We know. So, but so here's the thing. We as an environmental issues concerned council would like it if the salt could come into New Haven and not be stored in New Haven, but perhaps be distributed throughout the state before winter, so that we're not sitting with a huge pile of salt next to a river. And Gateway still makes the money selling the stuff. but maybe they could set up a distribution system, perhaps via rail, which might be available at the port. I know this is not, it's a pipe dream, but what do you think?
Hey, it doesn't hurt to bring it up about what their thoughts are on a distribution system outside of New Haven. We can certainly do that and see what the possibilities are.
Okay, that would be great.
Okay.
It does worry us that there's a huge pile of salt sitting next to a river. And also, of course, the idling of the trucks that day made the news. And I know it was because the State Port Authority closed the only other place where private companies
yeah.
go. Yeah, we get yeah. that. But anyway, okay.
But I will keep you advised of what's going on down there.
Thank you so much. Iris okay. Kaminsky had just put her report in the chat box because she is leaving to go to another meeting. She reports rainfall is slightly below average, 70% in New Haven as of March 31st. 3.04 inches versus normal 4.35 inches. Thank you, Iris. Chris.
Yeah, so on the Port Authority, so the Port Authority does own the East Shore Parkway, which goes right through the middle of the port. And that's how you generate money to, you know, run the Port Authority. So in the creation of the Port Authority, there was a requirement to do the bike trail through the port. And I'm wondering yes. how you're coming along on that.
Chris?
Yeah.
Okay. I couldn't hear you for a minute. That is, right now we're redoing, there's going to be an RFP going out to redo the strategic land use plan in the port. And part of that is going to be including making sure that bike trail is included. In fact, our board currently is in this beautify the port mode. Alder Ortiz and I are getting together a planting group. We're going to talk to Urban Resources about planting trees down at the end of Connecticut Avenue in the cul-de-sac, putting a bench, a little reading area. And one of our board members has designed a beautiful LED sign that we're hoping to put near the Tomlinson Bridge, directing people in and out of the port. And one of my big pipe dreams is to get the terminals to donate about 3 or 4 tanks in the port. And I want them painted. I want to do a contest for muralists or artists. And what I've seen throughout the country, other ports, silos, it really makes a difference. And coming over the Kew Bridge, it would be really dramatic. So that's what we're working on right now. And I'm hoping to get like Gateway, Gulf, even just one more, like 3 terminals to give us a tank. And even if we get one side, you know, a la the dinosaur that's on there from the LP buddy. So what do you think of that idea, Chris?
Don't really care much about that. What I am concerned about is in the creation of the Port Authority, the only way you were able to do that was by taking parkland, which was designated for public use. And the requirement is that you are to build a bike trail right through the port. And there were numbers of meetings and consultations and site visits and planning efforts that all coalesced in deciding that that trail should go right through. And it is one of the 5 things that you're required to do.
Yep.
And
yep.
I'm just yep. very disappointed that you're off on other tangents when you should be focused on what your mandates are.
Well, the problem with that is, first of all, it would go right up Connecticut Avenue from the cul-de-sac. And
it would go to the right-hand side of Connecticut Avenue.
Correct. The road is a mess. There's nothing, that road needs to be as,
but the route of the path is to the right-hand side of that road. and to just say the road is a mess, then put your resources into fixing the road, putting in the curb, and building the bike trail.
But it's not our road. It's not our road. It's a city road.
But the bike trail is yours, and it's not on the right of right. It's not on the road.
It's not. It doesn't take any of the road. Okay, I'll look into it.
So you lease out property to Gateway Terminals and other entities
down on Connecticut Avenue, yes.
That are encroaching on where the bike trail should be. And when UI put in their entrance, they made room. So I behoove you to press on this and make this part happen. It would be the most beautiful thing you could do for the port. To beautify it.
Okay. Okay.
Thank you, Chris.
I look into it. Okay. Great.
So I have one comment. I'm not really in favor of LED signs of any kind. The Environmental Advisory Council doesn't really like LED signs. If you can find a way to do a beautiful sign that doesn't have lights,
I don't care about
that. Doesn't use electricity, that would be preferable. Anyway.
Yeah. Well, we'll look at the DEP is giving a problem about putting a sign on that bridge anyway.
Yeah.
So we're kind of looking at the side of it.
Okay. But we much prefer something that doesn't use energy. The signs are very distracting. They're very bright. The city just, I personally participated in the updating of the outdoor light and sign ordinance.
Okay.
Update because we are having a problem with people putting billboards in the middle of the city, and we don't want to set bad examples. So if you can make a beautiful sign, otherwise that would be good. Okay, answers. I see you have your hand up. Aaron asked a question, what happened to the electric hookup station in the port to reduce the impact of idling trucks? And Maggie already answered that. There was a diesel reduction idling station installed in the port through a grant from the state. It was there on a port-owned parcel for years. Very few truckers used it over the years, and thus it became a dumping ground. We cleared the parcel, and it is now leased to Gateway. So,
yep, exactly. Yeah.
Thank you, Maggie. Good, you answered the question before it was even asked. Aaron, I don't see where you are, but does that satisfy you? Okay, well, if it doesn't, speak up. Anstris, you're next.
Yeah, about the Connecticut Avenue and the trail, I worked with Chris and others way back when to make this a condition of the Port Authority. And Connecticut Avenue doesn't currently meet city standards.
Somebody get me a drink.
A street. It doesn't have a crown and all of that. I think an important thing for the port to remember is that really all of the traffic on Connecticut Avenue are users and employees of the port. And I think we know how the city is struggling financially, that I think it would be good for the Port Authority to help look for a grant to rebuild Connecticut Avenue and get the bike trail in. And the bike trail is the Port Authority's responsibility to build it in return for the land that was turned over to you. But It does make sense to combine it with rebuilding Connecticut Avenue. And, you know, it's the port users that have beat the thing to hell.
I'll also jump in and say they were able to bring rail into the port down city roads, but they can't bring a bike trail in.
Well, I told you, Chris, I'll look into that. I will. I wasn't here for all those years. I've been here a year, so I will definitely look into that.
Yeah, and the road is also beat up by all the sewage sludge trucks that come in. Round trip, 15, 20 trucks a day, 365 days a year. And they go all the way down to the cul-de-sac where they offload their sludge. I don't think they're the Port Authority. They're their own authority, but they are definitely a user.
Okay, well, let's give Maggie a chance. Maggie has come into this after all these problems were already there. Right. I think Maggie is trying really hard to make a difference. Maggie was nice enough to come with John to our meeting tonight. We've never had anyone from the Port Authority come except for one specific issue before. So I think we want to set up a good dialogue and work together and make sure we all get all of these things done, which I think is
absolutely
going to be very good. And by the way, the EPA has a lot of funding opportunities for shoreline improvement projects of all kinds right now, zillions of them. And there's a whole list that Edith Pastana forwarded to us. And I couldn't even figure out what all of them are for, but I'm sure we could get money to do something. Am I correct, okay. Bonnie and Dawn?
We'll look into it.
I'm familiar with this huge number of opportunities, but I'm certainly very interested in them.
Okay.
Yeah, there's definitely EPA opportunities for, particularly for port areas and communities near port areas, EJ communities near port areas.
I know there's ERA grants, the diesel reduction units, if you believe actually Gateway is doing a project on that.
Well, Giovanni, I'll send you a list or two that Edith Pastana forwarded. There are just pages and pages and pages of funding opportunities that we should use.
Yep.
Okay.
That would be great. Yeah. And I can share it with Giovanni.
Great. Thank you. Okay.
Thanks, Aaron.
Yes. All right. Thank you, John. And thank you, Maggie, very much.
Okay.
Thanks, Laura,
for inviting us.
You're welcome. We're always happy to have you. And if there's ever an issue you need to bring to us, please do. We'll do. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Okay. I'm going back to the materials management thing with the textile bags. Giovanni and Dawn, is the city still looking into a textile recycling pickup curbside?
It's not something either of us would be directly involved in, so I really
who would be?
Can't speak to. That would be Parks and Public Works and probably the CAO office.
Okay. So is there a specific person we should contact?
The people in charge of either of those places.
Okay.
That would be Rebecca Bombero or Jeff Pescasolito.
Okay. Okay, we can do that. Okay. Anstress, are you still here? Oh no, I think she had to go. All right, we will work on that. I thought you two were the king and queen of sustainability for the city, or I wouldn't have.
If I knew something, I'd certainly tell you.
I know.
Just because I'm not aware of it doesn't mean it isn't necessarily happening. I mean, it's not a particularly large, broad initiative.
Yes, it is. Okay, thank you. All right, let's see. Okay, where's Lynn? Lynn, are you still here? Yes. So PSE&G, whom Lynn asked some very pertinent questions to, decided they did not want to come to a meeting, but they sent a draft document with some responses to questions and said they will forward a finalized document within a couple weeks. I'll keep following up, but Lynn and Giovanni, having seen what they sent, what is your take on their situation, and maybe the two of you could discuss this since I don't know anything about it.
So Giovanni, did you look at the response at all?
Yeah, I pulled it up right now as well.
Okay.
They're not generating a whole lot of power, that's for sure.
Yeah, right.
The 1%, Laura, in your email to me, you had asked the question about what a 1% capacity factor means.
Yeah.
That was Lynn's question.
It's less than 1% of the year.
I don't know how much they're permitted to run. I would imagine it's substantially more than that. I mean, the peaking plants are exactly that. They spin up for a short period of time when the grid is very taxed. And then the rest of the year, they just sort of sit there collecting payment, you know, capacity payments to sit there and be available if needed. And that's fair. I mean, I think when they were permitting them, they said they were going to be around 2% is what they expected them to run. So they're running less than that. But yeah, so basically they're just expensive hunks of metal sitting there by and large. You know, if you think about it, in 2020, they generated 2,713 megawatt hours. That's not much.
But 2020 was not a usual year for.
Yeah, but even then, like 2019 was 1,842. The previous 2 years to that were, you know, 5,000 and 6,000. And so it's not a particularly large number. I mean, the city uses, our own operations use 60,000 megawatt hours a year, or 60 gigawatt hours a year. So just to give you a sense of scale, if it's of any help. So they're not run very much. I mean, they're obviously looking to sell the plants, and I will confess.
Yeah. I mean, the questions that they avoided asking were, you know, I know that they're active on Long Island. They're a distributor for LIPA, I think. And I don't know if they generate on Long Island also, but they totally didn't answer anything about that. And I wanted to know their connection to the Crosstown Cable and if they would be willing to invest in something that would send power to Connecticut via the cable, since we've been sending it the other way for the last 20 years. And they didn't answer that, but, you know, I understand their